the third time's a charm. Three is a magic number. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm.
The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. Hello and welcome to Third Time's a Charm, the show that takes an in-depth look at the third installment of a franchise. This is episode 32, The Karate Kid Part 3. I am your host, Sensei Mike, and welcome to another episode of Third Time's a Charm. I am joined today by none other than my unofficial co-host, Brian Late Night Rodriguez, who was more than generous to donate his time to watching another Karate Kid movie. See, what we have done is one of our patented crossovers. So Brian and I kind of did this a few times last year where we would watch the first installment and sometimes the second installment if it was still taking place in high school over on his show, and then we'd watch the third one over here. So we did it with Prom Night. There was a major collabo three-way crossover with me, High School Slumber Party, and the Too Fast, Too Furious crew when we took on Tokyo Drift. That was epic. But here we are again today with Brian and myself splitting up the Karate Kid franchise a little bit. I had to skip part two, but we touch upon it, and we're back. Yeah, so why delay the inevitable even more? Let's just get on with the show here. So without any further ado, Karate Kid Part 3. Welcome to the final season of Third Time's a Charm. This is episode 31, Karate Kid Part 3, and joining me today is none other than my unofficial co-host, Brian Rodriguez. Hello, Brian. Welcome back.
I'm back. Is this the first time in 2020? I can't even remember.
Yes, it is. I believe there's only been one episode with my Leaf brother, your partner in podcasting, Kyle Reinfried.
Ah, that's correct, yes.
Was on the last episode, and here you are. And we're sort of doing our thing here where we reviewed Karate Kid Part 1 over on your show, and because Part 2 was not a high school movie, unlike Prom Night, unlike so many of the other sort of crossovers we've had. But here we are for Karate Kid Part 3 on Third Time's a Charm. The All-Valley Championship continues. How have you been holding up since Karate Kid Part 1?
Pretty well. I mean, you know, we had a blast talking about the original Karate Kid. And I know we'll talk about the series more here, but I think it's something we talked about on that episode on High School Slumber Party, but I'm sure it'll be echoed here. It's kind of an underrated series, especially when you count the TV show now, or sorry, the YouTube show now.
Yeah, that YouTube show really sort of injected new life into this series and showed that there were still legs there. But between last episode and this, did you watch part two as well? Did you go on beyond part three and watch part four? Did you watch the remake, sort of remake, reboot? Did you check out any of the YouTube show?
Well, I've seen the YouTube show, but I hadn't checked it out since we watched. I definitely watched part two and, of course, part three. I would be very bad if I didn't watch part three and I jumped on this. So I'm up to the original trilogy now. Maybe I'll watch the next Karate Kid. I don't know if I'm going to watch the Jackie Chan one, though you said it's pretty good, right? But I just wanted to get up to this point.
Yeah, you know, I only ask you to watch the part three. It's up to the guest if they want to watch any of the other movies. But yeah, one, two, and three, it's the Daniel trilogy, is yeah. I guess what we could call it. Because after this and the next Karate Kid is, it's Academy Award winner Hilary Swank, or future Academy Award yeah. winner Hilary Swank.
She does not win it for that film.
No, no. And then we have Jaden Smith with Jackie Chan, and I don't know any of the new cats, the young crop of kids in the next Karate Kid, but they're all good. So, yeah, the series continued on, the next generation. But we are here to talk about Karate Kid Part 3. Now, this one's nuts. I mean, let's just, you know, right off the bat, okay, the first thing, before we even talk about, maybe I should just do a quick summary real quick. So, the movie picks up, man, this is kind of hard to explain because some of it takes place while Karate Kid Part 2 is happening.
Yeah, technically, right? Yeah.
Right? It picks up basically right after the tournament when Miyagi has humiliated John Kreese, and you see that he has, like, lost all of his students. He is
lost his dojo, so he goes to his old Vietnam Army buddy by the name of Terry Silver, who is some kind of businessman that deals in hiding toxic waste. It was very
God. 90s. Yeah, it was, so it's like beautiful. Late 80s, early 90s. Like, I'll just right off the bat say this. They did not need to make him a bad guy and also be disposing of toxic waste, you know? Like, he was bad enough. Like, I love how they needed to, felt like they needed to add that to make him just more like Captain Planet evil.
Exactly, yeah. He hates the environment. He's an eco-terrorist, basically, is what this guy is. I mean, it's insane. He basically makes it his mission to get back at Daniel and Miyagi for his good, close Vietnam buddy, John Kreese. And they, like, apparently started, like, Cobra Kai together. We might touch upon that later on or not. So Terry Silver basically, like, befriends Daniel, trains him, because Miyagi is sort of like all done with training Daniel. He opens up a bonsai tree shop. He's going to try and settle down a little bit. And at the same time, Terry Silver hires a karate champ by the name of Bad Boy Mike Barnes to threaten Daniel daily to join the All Valley Tournament, or basically endure unending punishment for the rest of his days. Like, these guys are nuts. They're criminals. Basically, eventually, Daniel gets trained by Terry, but they reveal it's a big double cross, and he goes back to Miyagi with his head held low and his hands crossed, and Miyagi decides that he will train him after all, and he uses the family kata that Miyagi trains him with to center himself and gain back his sense of self, and he goes on to defeat Mike Barnes in the All Valley Tournament, and that ends it. Like, that basically ends the grudge. These guys are not going to keep going. We'll never find out, but the movie is over. There's a lot more going on in there, but basically that's it. Oh, it's a very strange direction to go with this movie, but okay, before we get into all that, I just need to talk to you real quick about timelines. The sense of timelines in films, particularly in sequels and sagas and trilogies, because this one is insane. You know, when we went to the Rocky marathon, how watching them all in a row, it doesn't make sense.
Not at all, in terms of, like, you know, he comes back and his kid's like 5 years older.
Yeah, it's like the next year, his kid's 5 years older. I mean, they jump around a lot. Like, even between, I think, Rocky Balboa and Creed, there's like a lot of stuff going. They're fudging some years and things. But this is very sort of typical once you sort of dive a little deeper into at least older trilogies before they were keeping track of continuity and stuff. Because this movie is supposed to take place like, well, the Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3 all basically take place over a year. So the first movie is basically like a couple months. Mm-hmm. The second movie starts at the end of the school year. It takes place over the course, I think, of basically a month. And then they come back from the second movie, and this movie's already started. So, yeah. Like, you literally see Daniel and Miyagi, like, leaving the airport as John Kreese is being put on a plane by Terry Silver to get out of the way so that he can do his, like, evil deeds and things. Now, the problem with doing that is now Ralph Macchio is no longer a teenager. He doesn't look anything like a teenager. He is, in fact, about 26, 27 years old. So, I mean, I know I just spoke for a long time, but can you sort of comment on some of this here with the timeline and how it sits with you as a viewer, having watched the first three movies? Coming back this far from the second one, nowadays, they would just pick it up today. They would never set it up, you know, like we just left them yesterday. How is this all sitting with you as the movie starts?
Look, I mean, the weirdest thing is not even, like, Miyagi. Of course, it's, like, as you said, Ralph Macchio. He still has a baby face, but he's still not a teenager. And you don't see, it's in the body. Like, as weird as this sounds, in the first Karate Kid, he's, like, a scrawny kid. Like, at least he feels like it, right? This one, you feel he's in more of a man's body. I think they try to, like, hide it at some point. I know we'll probably talk about some of these characters further, but I think it's... I mean, I don't want to steal, like, your order here, but... Well, we have to mention Robin Lively, right? She plays the love interest, Jessica Andrews. I love Robin Lively because she's in one of my favorite, and I am using that loosely, teen films. One of the most infamous high school films. Teen Witch. I don't know if you've seen it, but it
yes,
is.
She is. She is the titular witch.
Yes, I wanna be the most popular.
Isn't it? Take That. Isn't
oh,
that
Take
in there?
That. Yeah, but she's not. She yep. doesn't really rap. Her friend is really more the rapper of Take That. So.
And she's also Blake Lively's sister.
Yes, Blake Lively's sister of the famous Lively family. But their age difference, I looked it up, and it's like 10 years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So listen to this real quick. This is some IMDb trivia, but this is all over the internet. But Macchio was supposed to have a romantic relationship with Jessica, played by Robin Lively. She is the pottery girl who runs the store across the street from Mr. Miyagi's tree store. But Macchio actually asked to have their relationship be platonic because he didn't want his wife to be jealous. But in addition, the age difference was uncomfortable for all involved, as Macchio was 27 and Lively was 16.
Yikes. Why cast someone who's 16? It makes no sense.
No, it makes zero. I mean, it's, yeah. And it's one of the, I remember watching this for the first time as a kid being like, that's so weird, where she's just like, oh, by the way, there's this guy and we're working it out. So like, we have to be platonic. And Macho's like, yeah, we'll just be friends. Sure. I was like,
because that never happened in movies, you know? Especially how they've set up this series. And we know, you know, things changed because Elizabeth Shue kind of blew up. But, I mean, I'm probably going to reference the second one a lot. I guess, side question, how do you feel about the second one?
I love it, actually. I mean, it's a lot like the first one, right? But they go to Japan. It's in Okinawa. I mean, they're not actually shooting in Okinawa, from what I believe. They're shooting it in Hawaii or something. But I think it's really nice, you know? I think there's a lot of pathos with Miyagi's character, expanding his character and getting into his family and backstory and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I know, like, nothing beats the first one, right? Especially, like, with the mainstream audience. But I think if you're a fan, the second one is pretty awesome. Like you said, seeing, like, Miyagi's home life, we still get, like, some really cool fighting. I think in the second one, the iconic moment for me is, like, the ice.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
you know, there's like a lot of it. You know, the drum. But I bring
that
it up.
That song, right? I am the man who will fight for your honor. Like that song, man.
Great, great
iconic
song,
right
there. Yeah. And one of the things I was going to mention, too, is, and I can't remember her name, it escapes me, but like his love interest there in Japan, I think she's great, too, right? Like,
oh,
but
yeah.
Like, it's funny that we just keep writing them off, which is fine. Like, they're teenagers, but everything seems perfect with Elizabeth Shue. And then you jump to the second one. She's like, yeah, she left me for some UCLA football player or something like that. And you're like, okay. But then you meet this great girl. And then in this one, it's like, yeah, she, you know, she joined the Tokyo dance troupe or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's following her dreams.
And then you meet, you know, Robin Lively's character. And I think she does great. But again, she's a teenager, you know, and he's not. So it's just bizarre. And the thing is, too, what's probably most funny to me is that this character did not have to be a teenager. Like, she works in a store, a pottery store, right? It's not like they're in high school together, like, taking classes and dropping books, you know? She could have been his same age. I don't understand it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, like, Daniel's supposed to be a freshman in college. Technically, like, it would have been so great if he actually, there were a couple scenes of him in college, like, going to college, and then Mike Barnes, like, coming there, and then him meeting an actual college-age girl to hang out with or something. But as this movie plays, like, she doesn't even, that character doesn't even need to be in the movie. Like, if you look at all the scenes that are just her and Daniel, she may as well be Tyler Durden, like, imaginary. She really serves no purpose, and it's very frustrating. She's just there as another punching bag or as something used to threaten Daniel with, right? Like, hey, we're gonna go after her next, or this or that, or something of that matter, you know? So, yeah, it's really,
it's, not her fault.
It's a big missed opportunity. No, it's not. No, because it's just like with his mom. Like, they wrote his mom out of the movie, too, and there's a scene where she's, like, on the phone with Daniel. That wasn't even going to be in the movie. Macchio was like, we got to have at least one shot of her, like, explaining what happened. You know, people were dropping, like, flies out of this thing. And the people being replaced were not, like, top tier either.
No, that's for sure.
So listen to this one, too. So Thomas Ian Griffith, he's the guy who plays Terry Silver. He portrays a Vietnam vet, but in real life, he was 13 years old when the war ended. And at the time this movie was made, he was only 4 months younger than Ralph Macchio. And he's like, he's playing this mentor character. It's insane.
I didn't understand that either, because, okay, I guess we didn't talk about this, right? Like, so I'd seen Karate Kid, obviously, a bunch of times. I'd actually seen Karate Kid 2, not in a while, but, like, I'd seen that one a lot, too. And I don't think I've ever honestly seen this one.
Oh, I didn't even ask you that to begin. That's some important information.
Yeah, so this was like my first watch, because if I'd seen it, I'd remembered nothing, because I thought I might have seen it, but there was nothing from my recall here. I was so confused when I found out, like, I thought this guy was maybe that, what's his name? The Cobra Kai leader's name.
John Kreese, yeah.
I thought this guy was maybe John Kreese's protege. Like, that I was thinking, maybe this is his first student.
You know what they're like? They're like the Ken and Ryu of Karate Kid. Like, they trained together, like, in Vietnam, yeah, and, like, created Cobra Kai.
But they're he doesn't even look like he's the same age as John Kreese, you know? It's not even close. And that's why I'm like, wait a minute. They fought in, like, he's like, you saved my life in Vietnam. And then I'm thinking, like, maybe he was, like, a kid there, you know? Like,
oh, like a short round? Like, his, like, to, yeah, Indiana Jones? Like,
but no, you're
and
right.
That's so, like, funny. He does say, like, he literally is like, I can't even count the number of times you saved my life, Johnny. And it's like, wait, what?
It's like they just casted people, like, again, no bearing of age. And maybe that's the future, right? Maybe we're not supposed to be ageist. But let's be honest, like, that's not how we see things. We like our cast to look. They don't have to be the same age as the characters they play, but people have to line up age-wise, you know?
Yeah. Because you know where my mind goes now? Like, what year is it in the TV show, and how old is Daniel now? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it trips up my mind as far as the continuity goes and how old people are, and, you know, I don't know. It just makes my brain hurt. But the guy who they hired to sort of torment Daniel was an actual karate champion at the time. This guy who plays Mike Barnes. Bad Boy Mike Barnes, which my favorite scene in the entire movie is when, like, he comes in, like, so I'll set the stage, and it's like Terry Silver is like, he's got like an evil Alfred Butler who's like doing his dirty business deals with him while he's in the hot tub. And he's like hanging out in a hot tub, and in walks like this young hot karate champion Mike Barnes, and they like negotiate the most insane deal. He's like, I'll give you 5% of all my dojos in the valley after you beat Daniel LaRusso in the All Valley tournament. And Mike Barnes goes, I want to do my best, but I can't settle for less than half. And he's like, you know what, you got it. I love this kid. Look at those negotiating skills. This is going to be great. I feel great about this. I feel great.
Mind you, he's also promised, like, John Kreese, right? Like, half as well. So I'm like, where's it all coming from? How do you gain this much money, I guess, by polluting Bora Bora or whatever, with those poor business skills? Like, he's like, you know what? Your dojo's failing. And just backtrack a little. Like, we do see scenes of, like, the Cobra Kai dojo, like, actually failing. He's like, I haven't got a student in months. And, like, I, believe it or not, I kind of do feel a little bad. Like, that is, like, there's a small business that's failing here. But his strategy to bring it back is to open 10 of them and then give half to a random kid.
So like, what's even crazier about it is, who's going to want to join the Cobra Kai after it's been, I assume they only have the tournament once a year, right?
Yeah.
So it's been at the most 2 years. Like, Daniel was possibly away for the last tournament in Japan.
I think it's only been a year because they make such a big issue for Daniel to defend his title the next year.
Okay, so that's even crazier. So it's only been a year since the first movie, which is just mind-blowing. So no one's going to want to join Cobra Kai just because they beat Daniel, especially if they're still assholes about all this stuff, you know? And if you, like, watch the new series, like, it takes a lot and a lot of effort for the new Cobra Kai dojo to, like, get up and running again, you know? It's like, Johnny has, like, a really hard time finding students. He has, like, one student for the first half of the first season, which is great, but I'm just saying, like, yeah, their aspirations are, like, out of control. My guess is that he inherited all that wealth and is just pissing it away left and right.
Well, that, but if he really inherited it, would he have fought in Vietnam, though? I don't know.
Maybe he might have been drafted. Well, you know what? He seems like a maniac, right? So he probably wanted to go over there and, like, kill people or something. Like, he looks like, because he's like the comedian. As he's, like, plotting this revenge, he's, like, getting close to this teenage kid, like a big brother kind of relationship, and, like, imposing himself. Like, if he was smart, he would make Daniel seek him out, right? But, like, instead, he just kind of, like, shows up at Miyagi's house and, like, introduces himself and says, like, I'm here to apologize for John Kreese's behavior. By the way, like, let's hang out sometime.
It's so weird because he has the most convoluted strategy to injure Daniel before the tournament. When we've seen this film before, he could just, like, put on a mask, beat him up, you know? Like, and knock it out in one night. But instead, like, he's like, let me gain Daniel's trust. And then train him in the most asinine ways possible. Like, hit this wooden thing, you know? Like, hurt yourself.
Oh. Yeah, so here's what he does, right? So it took me a while to figure out his strategy because it's so dumb. But he wants to sort of, like, train Daniel the wrong way, right? Like, he feeds him all this bad information. He gives him, like, the Cobra Kai training where he's like, you got to strike first. You got to hit him once so they don't get back up. And he, like, trains him to be a killer, right? And so that, like, when he's taking Robin Lively out on the night before she moves back to, like, wherever, you know, Terry Silver hires some guy to, like, mess with Daniel, and Daniel's first instinct is to break this dude's nose, right? So, like, technically, like, he's turned him into, you know, the bad guy in it, but it's so dumb. Technically, like, what Terry does works. Like, he does what he sets out to do, but he still doesn't win. You know, Daniel still wins the tournament. Like, he still goes back to Miyagi. Like, I almost feel like the reveal came too soon. Like, he needed to, like, break someone's nose at the tournament or something. I'm so lost. That's all I can say.
A couple, you know, things with that. Like, I couldn't agree more. Did you read that note that originally, like, this character wasn't even a part of this film? That they wrote it as, like, just John Kreese getting revenge?
Oh, I heard there was an idea about that, but he was filming, like, another movie at the time.
Yeah, I never heard of.
No idea what the details of the other ideas were for Karate Kid.
No, basically that's why he goes away for a while, because they could only get him for, like, X amount of days. So that they brought in this other character and rewrote it that way, and I don't know. They should have gone with a completely different direction if they wanted to do this. There's this famous quote about this film, and I forgot who said it. But I remember seeing it when I was talking about the first Karate Kid on High School Slumber Party. It was something along the lines of, when we made one, we had to make two. And when we made two, and two did so well, you know, three was going to get made. And it was I'm like misquoting here, but, like, as you probably saw, nobody wanted to do three. Like, even the principal actors didn't really want to do three. But I believe, like, Pat Morita felt such loyalty to this series that he would even continue on to do another one. It really brought him back from the dead, as we discussed on the first Karate Kid. So I get it, but also it's just a shame too, like, that they should have just invested more time or not done it. I don't know.
Well, no, yeah, like, it just was not ready to go, but it feels like almost, I don't know, like a tax break movie or something, like a write-off, right? Like, it's like, how many movies have we made this year? Oh, if we make, like, one more, like, we could save this much money for the studio. What's close to being done? And it's like, oh, here's a Karate Kid script. Like, go, go, go. Like, just do it, right? And because there were things like Macchio had problems, like, with, like, almost every page of, like, what was going on here, you know? Like I said earlier, like, he was the one who allegedly suggested that they make the relationship plutonic, right? He's like, this just isn't reading right. It, like, just doesn't feel right. And so, like, this whole movie was a struggle, and you could feel it. I mean, it's got classic part three problems to it with strange new characters that come out of nowhere, taking a thread that was, like, so loose that it was basically, like, falling to the floor, but, like, you know, grabbing it midair and re-threading it, like, all this Cobra Kai stuff. Like, they could have moved on from all that and introduced something completely new and original. Like, I wanted to see sort of Daniel the college years, but instead he goes into small business with Miyagi and they open a bonsai tree store.
That's something that I think I would have, like, liked to know or read about, but not necessarily watch a movie about.
I hear you. Like, it's in, like, the novelization or something.
Exactly. It's something you used to do on this show. Or, like, even if you and I were talking, like, what do you think he does after Karate Kid 2? And we're like, oh, maybe he opens a bonsai tree shop. But it's not necessarily a movie I want to see. You know, like, we don't need to know what the next chapter is always for our characters. Another criticism I have is that, like, if they were going to do this, they almost didn't go far enough in certain moments. Like, one thing that I know it's, like, silly, but one thing that just sticks out at me is when he's training with, whatever, the new Cobra Kai dude, and he doesn't have, like, a gi, like, the karate outfit. He gives him one, and it's a Cobra Kai one, but it's not, like, I want to see Daniel in that traditional black Cobra Kai uniform, sleeveless, so we can be like, oh my god, you know? I feel like they didn't want to go that far because, like, Daniel's such this good, pure character. Again, like you said, he has that moment out where he punches the kid, but he almost immediately regrets it, you know? We don't push it enough. It's going to be a weird reference, but not that it was a good movie, but that's because I don't think it was executed well. But when we talked about Spider-Man 3, right, and we kind of get evil Spider-Man because he's influenced by the Venom, again, I don't think that was executed well either. But I guess what I'm trying to say is these third films always try to, like, not always, but some of the bad ones try to enter this other element into, like let's see a different side of Daniel. But they could never commit far enough to make me really feel like he's actually turned, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes perfect sense because there's no focus to this film. I think that would have been good if they had, like, caught sight of it sooner and made that more of what the movie's about, because you could have, like, it would have been amazing to see Daniel in that black gi. It would have been cool if he'd, like, you know, had stubble, like, if he was sort of like the dark version of Daniel LaRusso. Like, he's always, like, got a hot temper now. He's screaming at Miyagi. He doesn't want to, like, do this, that. He's looking for the easy way. Like, that would have been some good stuff, and it is bizarre that they don't go that extra distance, because I feel like they go too far in certain directions in some parts of this movie, i.e. the Mike Barnes attack sequences.
Yeah.
Because, like, Mike Barnes and his cronies, like, break into the tree store when Daniel and Robin Lively are, like, eating macaroni and cheese, and he straight up kicks her
full force
in the stomach. And Daniel's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? This is assault. Like, this is out of control. And then later there's a scene where Daniel and Robin Lively are going to get Miyagi's true bonsai tree from the side of, like, a very dangerous cliff. And Mike Barnes, like, is, like, toying with them, and, like, he's gonna, like, drop them off the cliff and, like, murder them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like they go too far in some regards in the wrong places.
Okay, so I just Googled what makes a good villain, right? And this is what came up from some random website. He, or could be she, I guess, he's worthy enough opponent to make your hero look good. I guess that's fair with Mike Barnes, right? And the other guy. But you, as the viewer, likes when he's on stage. I don't know if that's necessarily true here. No, right?
Nope. I mean, there's times I kind of like sometimes when Terry Silver's on screen, because the guy's really overacting, I feel like, in the fun ways. Whereas when Mike Barnes is on screen, he's trying to act menacing and it's not working at all.
No. And then the last thing here is he's clever and accomplished enough that people must lend him begrudging respect. I guess he's a karate champion, but like... But, like, they tell us that, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. So the thing about Mike Barnes is he's very threatening. Like, he's a very dangerous individual. Like, it seems like he's got no conscience whatsoever. Like, he will kick a girl in the stomach, right? He will probably... he tries to punch Miyagi, I bet, right? Like, I think there's a sequence. They're doing donuts in the street and almost get hit by a train in, like, one of the craziest stunts. Like, that, how is that in this movie? There's, like, that train dodge sequence. And then Terry Silver, like, I'm just confused by this guy, mostly. Like, I'm not scared of him. I couldn't see anyone being scared of him. And when he, like, you know, tells Daniel, like, the full reveal and stuff, like, Daniel has... They're just like, just walk away, Daniel. Like, you could go now. And... that's it. Like, we'll see you at the tournament. So, I don't know. I'm not threatened by that guy, but I am just physically by Mike Barnes. But they do not pass the test. Sorry.
No, definitely true. And back to Daniel for a moment. As we're talking about this, like, it's really making me think that one of the problems I have with him in this film is that he just still seems, for lack of a better word, like, stupid, you know?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Like, he falls for this shit because he's dumb, not because, again, just back to this, I wish he, like, was seeking revenge or something, or, like, not in a good way, but, like, we got this dark moment that was truly motivated, not like, oh, yeah, that seems about right, you know, like...
Yeah, no, well, like, that, because, like, what I was waiting for was Mike Barnes to show up and shoot Miyagi and, like, have a scene where Daniel's in the hospital. You know, I'm serious.
No, I'm like, laughing because it's, like it makes more sense. It's crazy.
But then you got to remember, too, like, Daniel, the character, Daniel LaRusso, is still a stupid teenage kid. Like, he's, what, 19 years old, maybe? 18? Like, he's going to be a freshman in college. Like, college freshman kids are idiots, you know? Like, they're very persuaded, and, you know, look at how many join frats and how many, you know, do crazy, stupid shit, right? So, like, it's not sort of beyond the realm of possibility that, like, a teenager would fall for this. I just... have trouble of Daniel falling for this because of what I know he's been through. All that shit with Chosen in Japan, all that shit, you know, that he went through in high school with the Cobra Kai. Like, he should have, like, a spider sense at this point. Like, he should know something's up, and he just doesn't. And that's really weird.
It's very weird because it might only be a year, but at least from our vantage point, this has been the most impactful year of his life.
Dude, how much shit has happened in this year? Oh my God. Have you ever been, like, in a fight in your entire life? I think I've maybe been in, like, one when I was, you know, 13, right?
Yeah.
Daniel's been in how many life or death situations in 12 months? Like, I can't wrap my mind around it when we sit and say, like, it's been a year.
So again, you would think that he would have some kind of, like, character development. And if you think about it, does he really have any character development from the first film? Like, except that he learns karate moves. Like, he has physical development.
Because he's, like, pretty much fully formed Daniel by the end of the first movie. That in the second movie, it's more like Miyagi sort of growth. And we see, because he loses his father and he reconciles with his teenage rival and he's back in his hometown village. And Daniel seems to be pretty constant. So where is there really for his character to grow at this point? I mean, how much can you really grow in a year when you've changed this much already?
I don't know. We should have seen something, no? Not like, oh yeah, oh I remember that. You know, like,
yeah,
Miyagi must have put the tree here.
Just as soon as he says, like, Cobra Kai comes out of anyone's mouth, you should just, like, walk away, right? That's first on the list for me, basically. and otherwise, this whole, like, wanting to defend your title thing, like, Daniel doesn't necessarily need Miyagi anymore to train him. Daniel just needs to go and put the work in himself and lose those extra 10 pounds and fucking jog his ass around the block and go wax some cars and paint a house or two and sweep the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, he knows what to do. He could beat Mike Barnes. He has the tools, but something happened to his confidence or something where, like, he just doesn't trust himself. It's very strange. He definitely took a step backwards.
It's weird. Yeah, absolutely, because the tropes they keep in this one aren't tropes that I would have necessarily kept. Tropes is a bad word, but just, like, recurring themes. Like, did they have to fight in the All Valley tournament again? You know, like,
why did it, yeah, why couldn't it be the All State?
Yeah, like, let's advance a level. Like, who cares? Like, I hate to say it, but who cares if he defends this, like, title? Like, he would just, like, fought for his life in Japan, you know? And now he's back to just to defend this.
Dude, great point. Like, he learned that drum technique. That should be enough to defeat Mike Barnes. Like, Mike Barnes shows up at the plant store, and Daniel's like, who are you guys? And he tries some shit, and Daniel does the drum technique and puts Mike Barnes in the hospital. And then the cops come, and he's like, look, this guy broke in. He tried to kick the girl from across the street. I had to do the drum technique. End of movie. We're retreading, and there's ways to have fun and do it, like, do it well. Like, I feel like in the next Karate Kid and even the Jaden Smith one, like, they find ways to really do the same thing but make it fresh and fun, whereas I think in this one they didn't. And it's basically the same moves, but, you know, not as sort of well trained.
Was there, like, a drum thing in this one? Obviously the first one has, like, the crane technique, and then obviously all the other stuff. Then the drum technique. What was the one in this one that he learns?
So the one in this one is kata. Kata, which is like a meditation, sort of like the hand movements and it's like all the slow moves. It's almost like a dance. And, you know, I see a lot of that in martial arts.
That's true.
The bizarre thing, though, is, you know, at the end of the tournament when he's getting his ass kicked by Mike Barnes, he starts to do that kata, and Mike Barnes, like, doesn't know what to do about it. Like, he won't advance and, like, take a hit. It, like, baffles him and screws him up so much that Daniel ends up getting a shot in and winning. Like, it is so dumb of a... It's not, like, a dumb thing. Like, I'm not trying to bash the kata. I'm just saying, as a finishing move, no. No, no, no. It is nowhere near the crane kick or the drum punch.
No, I didn't even remember it.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, it's like a meditation kind of thing. It's not a technique that you use in battle, you know. It's something you use in training to clear your mind, and I'm sure the moves are sort of based off of fighting moves, or you could sort of translate them in certain ways, but he just goes through the motions. I don't know. It's just so weird to look at that, to see that, and to watch it is nuts. It's just nuts. I just
Now, I don't know if you've read this, but there have been some people who actually recently have said that they love this film.
Love? I mean, I could understand. I like it in a way, right? Like, I love how sort of how much it doesn't work. Like, I like it as a bad movie, but I can't imagine people thinking it's like a well-made film. Like, I don't feel like it's fun to look at. Like, it's not well shot. Like, I don't think it's well acted. I don't think it's well written, right? But I think there's aspects of that poorness that make it enjoyable on a good bad level for me. But
yeah, the director said he hates it, like, for the record. Like, he didn't think it had been made. But I'll say this about it. It doesn't ruin the series for me. Like, it's not something like where I need to, like, oh, I wish this film never existed because it ruined the characters. It just, I didn't need to see it. Like, this might have happened in their lives. It just didn't need to be documented, if that makes sense.
It does. It's, I mean, it's certainly the low watermark, you know? I mean, and I think maybe part of its failure is what makes the show so successful. And, like, they do reference this in a couple episodes on the second season where, like, Daniel reveals that he was once trained by Cobra Kai. And they show a shot from this movie of him in the gi, season two. But, you know, I think we were getting into this a little bit in the first episode on your show. Is, like, this is a very proven formula, right? The it's like Rocky for children, or it's just the master mentor, just the sports movie, this and that. And it's always going to work. I don't think it's ever going to be terrible, but it's not good to me. I don't think this is a good representation of this type of story. I understand people liking it. I mean, people grow up and are from different times and ages and sort of, you know, hold things closer than others. And I just have no sort of affinity for this one. I have fun watching it, but I don't think that it's for the intended sort of reasons it was made.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
What else have we got to get into with this one? Is there anything we haven't really talked about? I mean, conversations are as long as they need to be. Episodes don't have to go on if they don't need to. But is there anything we didn't mention about Karate Kid 3 that you got to get off your chest?
I guess, what's the runtime on this?
Oh, it's like 80 minutes. It's a super short.
We spend a lot of time looking for a tree in this movie. It's amazing that, like, how much focus is put on, like, rappelling down and getting this one bonsai tree that Miyagi hid, apparently. I mean, I don't know anything about bonsai trees. I am surprised that their store takes off so fast. It does seem like something that, you know, I don't know if people are going out of their way to find.
Well, it was, I remember there was, like, a stand at the mall that sold bonsai trees, right? So it's like, I think at this point, maybe if this is supposed to be 1984, the year after 1985 or whatever, the year after Karate Kid actually came out, it's like before the cusp or before the curve or anything. But I think maybe at this point, like, bonsais were sort of everywhere.
Another thing I had in my notes that this happened after we did our Karate Kid episode, but has since made the news, so I figured we'd talk about it now, is the Karate Kid musical is supposed to be in the works.
That's right.
I don't know what your feelings on that is, but I mean,
You know, I could kind of hear the lyrics to Wax On, Wax Off in my head, right? Like, that's definitely something, you know, Cobra Kai, Do or Die. There's definitely a song in there somewhere. Ali's theme. Maybe we could get some lyrics to that. You know, Golf and Stuff would be a great dance sequence, right? I think. So I'm on board. In fact, I want to help write the book if possible.
One thing, see, I'm a little on the fence, right? Like
the beach sequence, oh man, the beach blanket bingo style. That'd be
like, I don't know what these songs are gonna sound like, you know?
Well, what if they use the songs from the movie, like Cruel Summer and You're, like, the Best?
That would be
like
cool.
What if they adapt those and they sort of go more on the rock route? Like, I'm thinking 80s rock, almost like,
yeah,
type of score stuff.
Yeah, no, and that would be cool. But I was thinking too, like, karate in a sense is like a dance anyway, you know, especially if it's choreographed like this. So that might be cool on stage to see, like, live,
yeah,
these moves live, you know. I wonder how serious they're going to take it, or if it's going to be, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek.
That's hard to say, especially you could go either way. I think they could probably figure out a good balance, because You know, it would be really weird if they did what they're doing with Mean Girls, is like they readapt the musical into a movie afterwards. Like they did with the producers, right? Like the producers came out as a movie, then it was a play, and then they adapted the play into a new movie. That would be wild. I'm on board for the musical Karate Kid. I'd like to see that. I like the imagery of the karate dancing kind of stuff, and yeah, I'm with it. Now, here's the real question. Are they going to stop at Karate Kid 1, or are they going to integrate the Daniel trilogy? Is he going to go to Japan in the second act, and in the third act, is he going to rappel down a mountain to save a tree?
Yes, I definitely think the tree scene is going to be added to the play.
Terry Silver's song about dumping toxic waste.
It's just zero redeemable about that guy. You know, I guess he's a vet, but...
He's a vet, but by the sound of it, like I said earlier, he reminds me of the comedian. Like, I feel like he was over there doing bad shit, right? Like I get more of a Full Metal Jacket kind of vibe from the Cobra Kai dudes. Like, they were not helping. I think it would have been better to not draft those dudes. And that ponytail alone is enough to just, like,
oh my God, want
to kick him in the nuts, like, oh repeatedly.
Yeah, no. No, thank you. But this is a time where, especially movies like this, heroes were heroes and villains especially were villains. There's just zero redeemable about these villains. Let's go back to the first one again, right? Like, I know John Kreese is like an ass in the first one, but at least the Cobra Kai kids, while they're bullying him, there's redeemable qualities in them because they themselves are getting bullied. So you kind of feel bad for them as well. I do feel bad for John Kreese, like, his business is failing, but he's also not a nice guy, and his mentor is even worse of a human being, so...
Yeah, I could only imagine what their master was like. What kind of monster sanctioned Cobra Kai to begin with? Oh, man, so... I mean, is that? I think that wraps it up for Karate Kid 3. I really don't know, like, how to talk about this movie properly. Like, it's just... blows your mind to think that, like, they put this out, like, that this is what they can, like, it's so just, my final thoughts about it are just how lackluster it is. Like, you could have done anything and you basically did, like, nothing. Like, that's how it feels to me.
Yeah, kind of went out with a whimper in terms of, like, the Daniel LaRusso trilogy. But again, it's something where Karate Kid 2 did well, even though it wasn't as critically acclaimed, like, it made money. You knew this was going to happen because they just, you know, they would make money on this series until it made no more money. And that's essentially what happened.
Yeah, and then they brought it back to see if they could squeeze more out of it, and they actually could. And, you know, they actually figured out a way to bring it back correctly, I feel, after all that time. You know, it may have faltered, it may have fallen, it may have fumbled, but ultimately, you know, it survives. And still in those goddamn All-Valley tournaments. I mean, Jesus Christ, they just keep going. They've been going and going. It's like the longest-running karate tournament on the planet. All right, Brian, I think we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for joining me once again here on Third Time's a Charm. It is 2020 now. It is the final year. You will be back a few times, and... if you'd like, can you please tell the listeners where else they can find you out there in the World Wide Web?
Well, as you've been on, Mike, and as you know, High School Slumber Party is my other podcast where I talk about high school films, including the original Karate Kid here. And we're having a really fun year. And of course, you could find that, well, every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts, but also where you're listening to us right now, or cageclub.me and all these other great places, and have a blast there. And also my other show with the aforementioned Kyle Reinfried is P.S. I Love Hoffman, where we talk about the wonderful career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. He was in a third film. Yeah, I guess he was in the third Hunger Games.
Yeah, and he was also in Mission Impossible
3. Oh, duh, Mission Impossible 3. Something you covered on Cruise Club, right?
Yes, quite recently. Fridays are for fun, because if you're not listening to Brian on Fridays, listen to the Tom Tom Club, where Joey and I are going through the filmographies of both Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks, alternating every Fridays. And Brian, you'll be back a couple times, I hope. I know, you know, I got to talk a couple more horror films with you. Definitely want to get you on for Day of the Dead, and maybe a few others in there somewhere, and maybe one or two non-horror films like Karate Kid here. So
definitely always love being on the Third Times is a Charm set. Studio 3, it's always good.
That's right. Studio 3, Floor 3, Building 3.
Three, that's a magic number. Yes, it is. It's the magic number. Three may stub at me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?